Baseball.
Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host, alongside our own David Haw.
We've got a lot of baseball conversation to cover.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to our friend Bruce Levine, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, guys. Well, the Cubs are over 500 for the first time since late May. That's exciting news. Now, how many games do you think it's going to take to win to be able to overtake the Atlanta Braves or whoever is third? Right now, they're six behind in the loss column.
That's tough, though.
29 left to play for the Cubs.
You've got to count on other people faltering, certainly the Mets, too. And you're not as far away as you once were. You're encouraged by how well you have been playing, but it's a steep climb, Bruce. I don't know. So many things are out of your control. The best you can say, really, is the Cubs have kept things interesting. They remain relevant, but I'm not sure you feel, like, hopeful because of how hard it is to pass those two teams.
19 and 10, I think, will probably get them – that will get them 86 wins. Will that be enough to overtake Atlanta or whoever else might be sitting in that third spot? Again, you know, you have to make up at least six games in that loss column. That's the only one you look at now. There's no halves as you get to the last month of the season.
You know, they're scoring runs, obviously. They also have won, is it 10 straight series or something like that? They're doing a great job of winning series, but they're always losing that one game, whether it's the middle game, the last game. They just, and now they got a morning game, basically, in Chicago. You got Paul Skenes on the bump, and you think to yourself, they've already won this series. Get the sweep. Get the sweep. And I just don't know if they've done that enough, Bruce. The longest winning streak is five games. They've done that twice this year.
Right.
They need to, if they're going to get to where you want them to be, if they're going to get that kind of record, they got to put wins together, man.
Yeah, they have to have sweeps here in these lesser series because you're going to have the series with the Yankees, Phillies, and Dodgers. Those are your three toughest series the rest of the year, okay? Two of those series are on the road. The Yankees are at home. But against Pittsburgh, like you said, you have to win today. You have to go into Washington. You know, realistically, okay, two out of three, but you really need to sweep the weaker teams. You play Pittsburgh again at home. You play Cincinnati at the end of the year, three in a row at home. So these are, you know, all these series are crucial. The thing that you guys said is true, and that is the good news is they're giving us something to talk about. They're playing their best baseball of the year since April. And now let's see if they can get out of that deep hole and, you know, again, start looking at the – at the win column here, see if they get six, seven, eight games over 500. Yeah, they'll have a chance, but it's they're really just going to have to play their butts off.
Well, help us understand then why the front office seems to maybe doubt their chances to do that.
Wow.
Because if that weren't the case, would they have made Drew Smyly available on waivers? I know this happens routinely. But if you are in the mix and you believe your team is capable of closing the gap, why would you risk losing a lefty that has been valuable in your bullpen? Explain the situation with Drew Smyly, if you could, Bruce.
I really think it's about if you look at how they've gone about their bullpen over the last, 4 to 6 weeks, they've taken those guys who have had a lot of wear and tear in the older pitchers, the veteran guys, and they have separated themselves from them. Neris, Leiter, Neris, 3 years in a row of 70 appearances before this year, you see the attrition. Leiter, injuries last year at the end of the year, you know, the wear and tear on the veteran arm at 33. Smyly, same situation. I think it's a a collaboration of both the manager and the front office to say, we need power arms, we need younger arms here over this last month. It's not that they don't like Smiley. And the likelihood is if he clears waivers here and he doesn't get claimed, that he will be back on the team. So, you can look at it as a money situation. You can also look at, I need power arms here to get through the last month of the year. If you look at what happened to the Cubs' bullpen last year at the end when they had to dig themselves out of a hole early on, and you saw all those guys that we talked about, you know, the Leiters and people like that. We saw Alzolay start the beginning of what turned out to be elbow surgery. So I think it's more that than anything else.
And Julian Merriweather is down too, right? He just went on IL with what's his issue?
Knee, right?
Knee.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't. But he had a terrible outing.
Maybe not.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Maybe it's just that the knee has been bothering him. Yes. Yeah. But because he's not able to give them his best, he and the team agreed it was time to rest, try to get it better, and be a better version of himself when he comes back.
All right, Bruce, let me ask this same question in a different way then. How much of a priority is it for the Cubs to finish the season under the CBT and the luxury tax?
I don't think that's number one. I really don't. You know, I just don't think that the money right now is the issue. I think the issue is trying to find the best players moving forward. And if you're Hoyer and if you're Carter Hawkins and you're sitting there with a manager after the first year, really being able to evaluate your talent properly going into next year, okay? Not getting fooled about the offense like they felt they had been a little bit here, finishing sixth in runs scored last year, and then only going April all the way till the end of August before they started scoring runs again. So you really have to take a hard look at what your players are, who your players are, and how they can help you not only this last month here, where you're really fighting an uphill battle, but making some real good decisions going into the off season about what you have and what you need.
With Smiley, they owe him $2.5 million to buy out the contract for next year. Doesn't it feel like you're getting rid of him now, if you can, in order to avoid paying that buyout? And I wonder, how does that impact other players, or how do agents feel about that, and will that be something that they'll, you know, kind of raise when they think about buyouts?
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to get his $2.5 million, okay? I just, you know, when Hoyer talks about this, and it'll probably be pretty soon, I'm sure he's going to say it's not about that. It's more about that we need more power arms here for the final 29 games of the season. Now, that said, if they could get another arm back or they could get something in return for Smiley at this point, it does raise your eyebrows because you say, well, they're trying to save the money. But in reality, I don't think that they want to use Smiley as much because he's pretty worn down from what he's done over the last 2 years. So I think it's more about, do we have better options to go to these last 29 games in order to win at the end of the ballgame? I believe that. Other people will push back and say it's about the $2.5 million. I doubt that that's really the situation.
Bruce, the offense is scoring runs suddenly, except for one rare exception, the last three, four games. Actually, the last week or so has been very productive. And you look at the bottom of the order, certainly Amaya and Pete Crow Armstrong. Right. But Dansby Swanson suddenly has gotten hot. You look to his numbers since about the last month or so, he is hitting his stride. He's actually opposite of what happened last year. Maybe he's going into September and he'll get hot and stay hot because he's got three homers in his last eight games, and he homered for mom last night, and that was nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's accepted the idea he's got to hit more to right field and, you know, hitting balls hard to right center. He's, you know, for a guy that's not all that large, you know, he's got good bat speed and he's got a lot of power. You know, he's always averaged 22, 23 home runs during his career. I think at some point that he got down about that he wasn't being the man, living up to the contract, you know, making $25 million a year for 7 years. I think he got back to the idea with council support. And again, council has been crucial in keeping a lot of these guys very positive. Council support is, look, you're the best shortstop in baseball. You save us a half a run a game. Just go out there and play the game. Enjoy the game. You know, go out there with the hitting guys. Work with them. But understand that whether you're hitting a home run or you're getting four hits or not, you're helping us win baseball games. So go back to being Dansby Swanson again. And I think that was the message that he's heard. He's a strong advocate of council and how he's impacted the team and the other players as well.
It was weird to see Randy Tellez come in and pitch. And, you know, obviously he hit Wisdom to get a run in at that point. You know, is there, we're just curious, are there unwritten rules that tell you, you know, you need to stop stealing bases if you're stealing bases? If they're bringing a position player in, you need to stop scoring. What is the general feeling in baseball about that sort of stuff?
Well, I'll give you a quote from Whitey Herzog, who had those great teams in St. Louis back in the 80s, and they were based on base running and base stealers, right? And he said, I'll stop having my guys like Coleman and Ozzie Smith and people like that steal bases to try to score runs when you tell your guys to stop hitting home runs, okay? So when it comes to the stop stealing bases, when is enough runs, okay? Mm-hmm. I think there is an unwritten rule. You know, I don't think the Cubs stole a base after the sixth inning after they were running crazy on Grandal the other day. Again, you don't want to. I don't think council would have put up the stop sign for any steals after six. There is that unwritten rule, and people will get hit, you know, in situations like that. But I think it's bad when a position player comes in. Would you guys be in favor of saying, "Hey, let's time to go to Dairy Queen. We quit." You know, you want to stop the game?
I'm always up for Dairy Queen, Bruce. I'm
right,
always up for that.
But I mean, would you be willing to say, hey, if it's a 10-run rule after seven?
No, okay. You can't do that.
So I mean, you know, the Cubs had a famous game. You know, back in '89, they were down 9-0 after six. They won that game 10-9. So you know, anything's possible. The fans deserve the whole game. But I do agree, rules about position players pitching in games, there should be some rules about that. I can't, you know, it never looks very professional. Let's put it that way.
Bruce, I want to go back to the Smiley thing for a moment. I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm curious. Knowing
you sure?
him, knowing it, okay. Very funny. Very funny. Save it for Saturday. Knowing Smiley the way that you do, and I wonder, would he have gone to the Cubs and said himself, you know, if you can do this, I would like to join a contender. If you can help me, you know, finish, whether it's the end of his career or end of the season, is it conceivable that he would have approached the team about making him available?
I don't think so, but you know that anybody that's going to pick up a contract that has $4 million left, including the rest of the salary this year and then the $2.5 next year, you better believe it's going to be a contender, right? They're not picking up a veteran left-handed pitcher for 30 days if they're not a contender. So that's, I think that pretty much goes unsaid. But Smiley, you know, being a pro, I talked to him at length after both Leiter was traded and Neris was released. And he said, you know, the most unnerving thing for all of us is we have families and young families with us. And uprooting the families and going somewhere else. Yeah, you don't want to leave the team. You don't want to leave the city. And he, Smiley loves Chicago. He said, but the most important thing is, you know, what does my wife do about driving across country with a 2 and a 4-year-old?
Right.
You know, and people don't want to hear it because it's a business. It's a business where guys make a lot of money. It's looked upon as a fun thing for them. Sure it is. But those are the major concerns for guys when they're uprooted toward the end of the year. And, you know, it was the case with Leiter, who's got a 3-year-old. And, you know, his father-in-law came down, drove with the wife. from Chicago to New York, help pack up the building, the apartment. So it doesn't sound like a big deal to most people because of the money you make and the game you play, but it is. I think Smiley would handle it knowing he's going to a good team. If someone wants him for that pennant run. Yeah, you'd be disappointed it's not the Cubs, but there's somebody else out there that thinks that you're going to help them win a World Series.
There was an interesting moment in the game yesterday where, it was really interesting to hear from Justin Steele, where he had steaming hot in Chicago. I don't know what the weather is in Pittsburgh, but it looked like he was sweating mayonnaise. Now he's got the rosin. It's on his arm. Vic Carpazzo is the umpire, and he's a guy who threw out Edwin Diaz earlier in the year over a similar thing. He allows him to go and kind of wash it off. I saw some Mets fans upset about it, but what are the rules with that? And he even Steele said after the game that he was kind of worried that he was going to get in trouble because the rosin was sticking to his sweaty arm.
Yeah, you know what? The rosin bag, in a game before that, the umpire had the pitcher make sure that the rosin bag wasn't on the right side of the mound, and he had to have him take it and put it behind him because, it's a distraction when the pitcher is throwing. It's white, right?
Yeah.
So it's a distraction with the ball. That's why they're so anal about the fact that they want that off the arm or any part of the uniform. So I think that's why you have it. But I don't know about the consistency of the rule and, whether the umpire always calls it or not. Last night it was 89 degrees at game time in Pittsburgh. So there was certainly still a heat issue there yesterday.
Speaking of the weather, Bruce, I know you're not a meteorologist, nor is Roger Bossard. But what the heck happened at Guaranteed Rate Field that allowed them to waste Garrett Crochet and pitch four pitches? The game lasted 1 minute before they suspended it.
Yeah, they didn't know. I mean, as good as their meteorology departments are for the ball clubs and for Roger and for the Cubs, this came out of nowhere for them, and they were shocked by it. To be honest with you, I mean, it came down hard, and it didn't go away right away, so they would have never even thought about getting Crochet up if they knew that it was coming. It was an oddity, but Rogers is as good as anybody in baseball at detecting. And the Cub people, Kiermaier does a tremendous job. I remember the last homestand, him being down in the dugout, waiting, between pitches coming out, informing umpires that storm was coming again. It came three times within an hour, three different mini storms. So he was on top of that. These guys do a terrific job, but this was out of nowhere, and it really disrupted them. We don't know. When I get to the ballpark today, we'll find out more, but we don't know when Crochet is going again. Smart
could be
money
the end
is,
of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
awful way to end a year.
Yeah. Before the game, Brian Bannister, their director of pitching, said they'd like to see him pitch the rest of the year out, be healthy, whatever form that they choose that. There was some thinking, after talking to Grady Sizemore on Monday, that he would be stopping at some point. So I think we'll get a more clear message maybe today or tomorrow from the White Sox on that.
Great stuff, Bruce. Appreciate your time as always. Love you jumping on. Even the sod father can't avoid the horrors of the White Sox. That's the 2024 season.
Thanks, Bruce.
We'll see how it ends up. Guys, have a great
day. Good stuff.
All right, buddy. That is Bruce Levine. Fun to talk to him.
It is. He's got a good handle on the Drew Smiley thing, I believe. And I don't want to overstate what it might imply, but it's impossible to ignore when you have this happening and the reports from Bob Nightingale about him going on waivers doesn't mean they're going to outright release him or designate him for assignment. It happens regularly, but it's fair to wonder what we have amplified, I suppose, if there's a disagreement between what the manager may want in terms of his bullpen available for a stretch run and what the front office is looking at in terms of getting under the luxury tax.
Can we talk about the manager for a second?
Yes.
Let's do that next. I want to get into some of the coaching staff stuff, if that is a thing. Am I looking at things that aren't there, et cetera? But we need to talk a little bit about the difference between Craig Counsell and other managers in terms of hiring a guy who's his own man versus hiring your guy. You know what I'm saying with that? Let's talk about that. Mullenhall on the Score.
There's a report that you guys waved. You're smiling.
Yeah, no comment on that.
Mullenhall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That is Craig Counsell talking about when he first was asked about Drew Smyly on waivers. And look, I think what's fascinating here, I don't know. I mean, I think maybe we're inventing that he's mad about this and the general manager and he have a different vision of things. We don't know.
Well, I don't think we're inventing it. I think we're asking the question appropriately because his answer, typically Craig Counsell is, if he's not effusive or if he's not open, he does address things in his own way. No comment raises your it registers. It raises your antenna a little bit.
I totally agree with that. And it makes you wonder. I feel, David, I kind of hinted at this as we went to the break. I want to get your take on it. Do you believe that there is a sort of reset out there waiting to happen with Craig Counsell? Craig Counsell came in here. He couldn't bring his group with him, right? Everybody stayed. He has players that he doesn't pick. Not that he picks all the players. He did pick all the players in Milwaukee, but you had this sense that he was kind of directing things and he was this chess master. He's getting to know who these guys are. We've seen, you know, the move they made with Paredes. I don't know if you'd like that, if you question that. We see the idea that next year maybe there'll be changes, maybe more things will change. I just wonder if you believe there's a reset coming.
I do, and I don't think it's a negative thing, and I don't want to imply any friction or anything like that.
I think
Craig Counsell is an extremely intelligent guy, and that's not exactly breaking news. I do think that when you talk to people who talk to people, or when you talk to people around the organization, you come to find out that Craig Counsell is somebody that respects and I think craves not conflict, but being challenged on a regular basis or being having conversations that get to the bottom or the core of what's wrong or what's better, solutions to problems. And I don't know that he, in your first year, you're ever going to have a good sense of that. So I think that this season being almost exploratory in nature, we had high expectations because of his salary, because of a lot of things. I think the Cubs are more talented than their record implies. There are a lot of reasons that are related to baseball and disappointments, but the question is a good one because I think what Craig Counsell may have found in this year is that he missed the friction that having a bench coach like Pat Murphy created, the creative tension that maybe existed between him, and that may be even overstating it, but I think you want to always be challenged on a daily basis. Who's going to do that to the new manager in town making more than any other manager in baseball?
Yeah,
I don't know that that guy exists. Maybe it's Jed Hoyer and Craig Counsell. They need to have more back and forth. Maybe it's Carter Hawkins who might be reluctant to challenge the new manager in town because of what he makes and what his hierarchy is. I don't know, Molly, but I think it's fair to wonder where this is headed in terms of his staff, in terms of the approach, because Craig Counsell is the second most powerful person in this organization right now.
Who's most powerful?
Jed Hoyer.
See, you know, I just wonder, is Craig Counsell not the most powerful for this reason, the contract, the guarantee that he's going to be here, the amount of money that he's making? I'm not saying that there's friction between the two
men. I think eventually he could be and should be.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he's there yet.
Okay.
Because,
and I love Jed, and I think these guys are all really bright people. I don't want to act like I'm creating some problem here, David. I do think, though, that, you know, one guy can make a lot of decisions the other guy might not want him to make. Or, you know, when you had David Ross, he was going to do what you told him. That was one of the benefits. And you decided to get better or get different, whatever way you want to term it. They tried to get better by bringing in a guy they thought was the best and paying for it.
No doubt about it. But I don't know that you certainly change your styles in managers when you hired Craig Counsell and replaced David Ross with him. That's not a criticism. It's just a difference in reality. In Counsell, not going to pretend to know him better than anybody else, but when you, again, when you talk to people who are around him on a regular basis, even with the media, I think he relishes the back and forth. He relishes the banter. He relishes being challenged. He doesn't mind that at all.
Right.
I wonder how often that happens with roster decisions, with in-game decisions. I wonder who was there to balance his point of view, you know, because frankly, again, not to overstate what Pat Murphy meant to him, but you look at what Pat Murphy's doing now with the Brewers, and it's fair to think that he was a guy that wasn't afraid to say to Counsell on a daily basis, what are you doing here? What are we going to do here? And challenge him in a way that brought out the best in him. Who's that person on the Cubs staff? I don't know. Maybe that stuff is going on behind the scenes. We'll find out later that it was always somebody, but I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this first season there are more changes, because he's still in the feeling out process organizationally. He's got a long contract, provides him security. This year could be the exploratory season.
312-644-6767. Paul is in Valpo. Hey, Paul.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Guys, I'm kind of like dumbfounded on why we're spending so much time on Drew Smyly. I mean, he hasn't even really been in leverage situations. You talk about power arms that cannot put the, you know, keep the ball out of play. I think he's pitched like 48 innings and he has 18 strikeouts. So yeah, he's been on a decent run in low leverage situations. He might get you at two innings in the middle of a game and eat up some innings. But assuming Wicks is coming back pretty soon and you got Hodge and some of these younger guys that can actually strike guys out, I mean, if they saved a couple bucks and I got rid of Drew Smyly, is Drew Smyly really going to be the reason the Cubs don't make the playoffs?
No, Paul, thanks, no one's suggesting that. Thanks for the phone call. We are spending time on talking about Drew Smyly because of what it represents in the bigger picture, potentially.
Yes.
I think Drew Smyly in the small picture, if you take the micro view of it,
lefty.
The Cubs don't have a left-handed replacement.
It's real simple.
Jordan Wicks is an injury waiting to happen so far in his career.
Right.
So you also value veterans and experience down the stretch in September. So I think that goes without saying. What it does potentially represent is what we're talking about, is how the front office and the on-field, the manager, are merged together. Are they aligned philosophically?
And here's, you know, to answer the question, is he the straw that stirs the drink? Listen to what Nico Horner said yesterday on the afternoon show about Drew Smyly.
And he wants the ball, and he's taking the ball, you know, 3 or 4 days in April right away when a lot of guys don't even want to throw back-to-backs and a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, he's got a bit of an old-school mentality as far as pitching in that way, but also has continued to develop parts of his game, you know, as he's gotten older, that have kept him in a really great place, not just as another guy in the big leagues, but a guy who's still getting both righties and lefties out, and any team is the better team with him on it.
Any team's a better team with him on it.
Nico's right. Drew Smyly's a pro. He has done everything that they have asked him to do. Is he going to be the difference whether the Cubs catch the Braves or not? I don't think we're suggesting that at all. But I do think that you get rid of somebody before a potential sprint to the finish. You're trying to catch, you know, the third wild card team. You're hurting your chances by getting rid of lefties in the bullpen who you trust.
Barring learning something along the lines of Drew Smyly asked to be traded, I really want to get out of here. Mm-hmm. Or Craig Counsell said, you know, I don't really need a left-handed reliever. Barring something like that happening, this feels like you're making a management decision about next year, similar to the one you could be accused of making with Hector Neris about next year. And I get it, you're rebuilding the bullpen all the time, but this feels more about not paying a guy $2.5 million as a buyout for next year than worrying about whether you can get to the playoffs. Do you see what I'm saying?
To me, it's very transparent.
It seems that way.
It's very transactional. The Cubs are trying to save $4 million.
It's transactional.
Yes.
And that's why they stop and talk about it.
And maybe teams do routinely place veterans on waivers. Remember, there were reports last year about big names being on the waiver wire. They're not always reported. The White Sox could have several players they would like to maybe place on waivers. Maybe they have Andrew Benintendi. I'm not suggesting that they should, but maybe they should think about it. Who's going to claim that contract? The point is that this happens all the time. We're not always privy to the details, and you can see why the Cubs would maybe look to save $4 million if their goal is to get under the luxury tax, which we know that it is. It just creates a conflict inherently with trying to catch the Braves and trying to, you know, make ends meet. They're not always compatible, right? Because this is a move about getting under the tax. It's not about winning now.
Didn't the Sox accidentally claim Alex Rios one year? I mean, they tried to stop a move and they wound up with a guy that they didn't really want.
You paid a lot of money. Maybe you hit a button. Oh, no. I hit send.
Did you?
No. Did you do that, Kenny? No, I didn't do that, Kenny. That must have been Rick. So I don't know.
It was real late at night and I was playing the video game. I don't know what happened.
Of course. Yeah, it's just one of those things that, again, it probably does to some people. I understand the question, Paul. It overstates the value or the significance of a left-handed relief pitcher who doesn't always affect the outcome of games. But it potentially also represents something in the bigger picture that's interesting.
And if the bigger picture means that you've got the money to go get Juan Soto, wouldn't that make you a better team?
Definitely.
I'm just saying.
Definitely.
Do you want to spend money?
I wonder.
There's a guy out there.
Yeah. There's going to be that conversation.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be that dilemma. It's going to be similar to, but not the same as, what we talked about last year approaching the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes. The Cubs were never really seriously involved in that. You can only hope, if you're a Cub fan, that it will be different with Soto and that they will have a legitimate shot to get in the room and make their pitch. I don't know if that's going to be possible. Long way to go between now and November when that begins.
Can we say in retrospect that you should have gotten Ohtani? Anybody should have gotten Ohtani? That Ohtani has performed probably better than
some people. Look, we're not going to be in an Ohtani race. I'll tell you that right now.
I think you could legitimately say that.
Yeah.
Even though the price was exorbitant and they deferred all the money,
yes,
that Shohei Ohtani is worth every penny.
He's 40-40 club. He's going to be the MVP despite not pitching. Maybe he pitches. Maybe he comes in at the end of the year with.
I love that idea.
I love that notion.
It'd be
hilarious
that you're going to send him in on the mound for the first time in the playoffs.
Right.
Michael, I would love to see Shohei Ohtani face
Kopech
Aaron
walks
Judge.
A guy, and then he comes in and strikes out.
That's crazy. He's not going to walk anybody.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Kopech's going to go three up, three down. I can't wait for his immaculate inning in the playoffs.
Oh, boy. Immaculate inning.
It's going to happen.
Remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah. We might
see one today.
Oh, my gosh.
We might see one today.
Who's going to have the immaculate
Skeens.
Inning? Look at you. Boy,
we might have to talk about your investment at some point, David.
Yeah, David has.
Hold on.
We got to get to that.
Your suspense is building.
Your wagering.
I said that for a fact.
Wagertainment.
Okay, a little wagertainment. I'm in on the wagertainment today.
All right, we'll explain that about 9 o'clock. Next, we're talking to Chris Chelios. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
A little bit more information out there now. After he's had, you know, a number of starts in the big league. So we'll have a plan going into it. He's got good stuff. He's obviously been really good in his first, whatever it is, 15 starts or so. And, you know, we'll have a little bit more information going into this one than we did after his first one or two starts. So it'll be a good challenge. And, you know, we're focused on tonight and getting to win tonight and then being able to deal with that last game of the series.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That is the voice of Ian Happ.
Mm-hmm.
Happer, as we call him. He was on with Dan and Lawrence yesterday is talking about facing Paul Skeens, Mr. David's favorite young pitcher. There's a lot to like about him, but you've gone too far, haven't you? You now have
I don't think
fever.
So.
You have the fever?
I don't think I've gotten too far on Paul Skeens.
You've got the fever, though.
I know they have the book on him. I'm a big fan of Paul Skeens. I love the way that they drafted him last year, and he started the All-Star game this year. Paul Skeens is fun to watch. He is appointment TV and radio. 11 o'clock, by the way, pregame right here on the Score. Zach Zabeman will bring you the action. I think Paul Skeens is going to mow down the Cubs today for about 7 innings. I think he's going to strike out at least 8 or more, like he has in 11 of his 17 starts. That's a guy who is going to be tough to hit, even with a book on him. I'd be willing to bet that he's going to.
And you did.
I did.
As we sat here.
I'm so like, you, what's happened to me?
You had Dustin look up the numbers.
Yes.
And what was it, 6.5 was what they thought the strikeout number
He got me
be?
Going, yeah, 6.5.
That was the straight number, right?
That was the straight
David
number.
Enhanced it, I believe, right?
I enhanced it. I did. I went to my FanDuel app, which I'm loath to do during business hours. You know, I'm like, I'm on the job here. But during a break, I went to the FanDuel app, 8 or more strikeouts. I think it was a good number. It was like plus 236
well,
or
you,
something.
I think you took 8 when we talked, right, earlier.
I did.
And now you're going over. I took 9,
eight or
so
more.
I'm with you.
All right, 8 or more. You said 9.
I did.
Why do you like Paul Skeens so much?
I love Paul Skeens.
How come nobody makes fun of you liking Paul Skeens?
Because I don't get out over my Skeens, as Peoria Matt said of you.
Because Molly had to be paid $500 to put a Cubs t-shirt on.
I didn't get paid. That was
well, you got paid for a good cause. A good cause.
God bless him. Yeah. He,
Skeens, for your generosity. Though, will likely.
That was ridiculous.
I didn't go over my Skeens on the first pitch. I'm not saying he's going to hit 101.
See, said, that would be fun. Like, that's a fun bet at plus 2,000.
First pitch to Ian Happ is going to be a 98-mile-per-hour fastball right down the middle. Ian Happ can have a book on him. If he does, he's swinging and he's connecting and he's probably hitting it out of the park if he connects.
Matchup now is like must listen because of all of this going on. Hap makes a comment on the station, and then you can listen to Pat and Ron call it. I mean, come on. Who doesn't want to hear that?
It's great drama for a Wednesday morning. I think PNC Park is the place to be. And the Cubs have an opportunity to sweep. Going to be tough. You said 4-2 Cubs. I think 3-2 Cubs. I think Skeens goes 7. They get one run. He reaches his pitch limit. They go to the bullpen. They get to the bullpen. And PCA makes it happen by creating some sort of run, manufacturing it down the stretch after the 7th inning.
Total's 8, so you guys are both on the under.
Is that right?
Total's 8.
Oh.
Kyle Hendricks on the other side.
That concerns me. That concerns me more than Paul Skeens, actually. I like Kyle Hendricks. Who doesn't?
And haven't they skipped his last two starts, right? He hasn't started in a while.
It's been a while. When was the last time Kyle Hendricks started for the Cubs? I wish that they were in better shape with their rotation going into September.
I remember him hugging Javi Baez. Do you remember when
that was a quality
was
start?
And that hurt his back, and now Baez had to have back surgery, right?
That was hip surgery.
Oh, hip surgery.
Baez had the golden sombrero, and that's last we saw him, right?
It might be. Well, last we saw of Javi.
That's what I'm saying.
He didn't really play against the Sox.
No, he didn't.
He went to the South
Side. Didn't play against the Cubs.
He wasn't even booed.
Sombrero.
He didn't even get booed.
Yeah, he did play. He skipped the next game, but then he played the third.
Oh,
game.
Oh, he played the third game, and that was it. How many times did he strike out?
He played the day game.
Because
I remember that will be an indelible mark for me being at Wrigley last Thursday during the day game, I believe it was, and seeing Javi Baez's name at the bottom of the lineup on the scoreboard, hitting a robust 185. And then looking like a 185 hitter at the plate.
And he's due like $75 million, $72
million. They still owe him a lot of money.
Yeah. What are they going to do with him?
Buy him out, probably. There's some talk about that in Detroit. What else are you going to do with him? He's probably blocking one of your prospects.
Well, he's blocking. They have a guy they brought up. But, you know, the idea, listen, he's had worst year of his career, and he's going in for surgery, and here's hoping.
I'm more worried about Dansby Swanson than Javi Baez. I hope Dansby Swanson stays hot. This is a fun thing to consider. Dansby Swanson over the last month has been the hitter that he needs to be for the Cubs. Going into September, a year ago at this time is when he started to maybe fade, you know, a little tired.
If only he were as good as his wife is at her sport.
Well, that then he would be MVP caliber.
He would.
Yes.
He absolutely would.
Yes, he would. He was great talking about that. We had him as a guest. I know you're happy for me.
I love
on
you.
Saturdays inside the clubhouse.
I love it.
And he still was on a high last Saturday morning about just trying to put into words what that meant to him for her to have the gold medal winning goal in the Olympics.
It's incredible.
What a summer.
Yeah.
And what a comeback for her.
Listen, her career, she had a very serious knee injury. I watch these games. I can't help it. I really am interested in it. And she got cut down by this Irish girl in a international friendly.
It was a friendly. It wasn't so friendly.
No, we called it a friendly, but it was like a terrible foul. Blew out her knee, had a lot of problems, took her a while to get back, but she is sensational. She's not only a goal scorer, she's not only fast, but she is committed to the team. She goes back. I could talk about her game for hours, Mr. David. Thank God I wasn't interviewing.
Then recap the gold medal winning goal. And also, didn't she have a really big assist in a game previous to that?
Yeah.
That was made she had a great tournament.
The woman who has taken over that team, let's hope that Pochettino can do the same thing with the men that Emma Hayes has done with the women. He is a great manager. He's going to be the new U.S. Soccer manager.
I know who you're talking about.
And hopefully he comes in. And, I'm just saying, they got the World Cup coming up. Let's make sure that they get as good as the women. But the women were phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
And they hired a great manager, and she changed her team, and she ran out a couple of players, and everybody was surprised by it. And guess what? They're better. Better as a result. That's good stuff. And love Dansby, too, if he stays hot.
David, maybe you can get a quick futures bet on the World Cup now that the U.S. men have a new manager.
I think he's trying to get Dansby Swanson for a homer today.
I wanted Dansby Swanson to hit it. Is it Dinger Tuesday? No, it's Wednesday, but I'll bet
maybe
on him
a parlay,
the
maybe a parlay. Skiing strikeouts with a total bases by Dansby Swanson.
I can see Dansby Swanson having the game-winning hit in the eighth inning, a double off some pirate relief pitcher. How about that?
That's awesome. Mulligan Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.